Welcome to hour number two on a Monday with hashtag Daily K's host, Peter Bibb. Tired of just scratching the surface of career? Want to get deep in the weeds?
Pete and I will unpack everything about Korea, its history, its culture, and its people on
Now and Then with David. It is truly a time to let go of any preconceived ideas that history is a bit boring, it's a bit difficult. Every Monday we learn about various interesting aspects of Korea's history linked to sometimes everyday events, movies, songs, much more. Today it's a deep dive on a certain person with our favourite Monday person, Dr. Professor David Tizard. How are we doing today, sir?
It feels like a Monday. Here we are in the studio.
Monday
Great
blues.
To be here.
First day of the month. I love it. Yeah. Maybe I'm a bit anal like this when a new month starts on a Monday. Like, that just feels fresh, like it was meant to be that way.
Isn't Sunday the first day of the week?
See, I grew up learning that in church as well, but I never felt that way. Do you feel like Sunday's the... No! It's the last
Monday.
And towards the end of Sunday, I get this terrible feeling of dread. I think it's from when I was growing up and not having done my homework for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Around 5 p.m. on a Sunday, that's my worst time of the week.
Yeah.
I just don't like it. Even if my week is full of this, meeting wonderful people like yourself, doing Daily K, I still don't want to. I don't want to get to Mondays for some reason.
Well, here we are. So let's make the most of it. Let's seize life. Come on, stay hard.
Inevitable.
Yes.
Today is Kulojaenal as well, which is a holiday for my kids' school. You know, it's Workers' Day here in Korea, which I don't think is like officially a public holiday for everyone. It's kind of by choice and maybe some government institutes. Did your university take it off as well?
I don't do lectures on Monday. I come
anyway,
to studios and do this. But I know my kids and my wife have today off.
Nice.
So whether I would have today off, I'm not sure.
There's lots of those special days in the month of May, known as Family Month as well.
Yeah.
We've got Children's Day coming up. Today's topic, wow, I was totally unaware of this person and their story. And I'm so keen to hear more. So what are we doing?
We are going to talk about a young woman from Equatorial Guinea, a young black woman that grew up in North Korea under the guidance of Kim Il-sung, who spoke only Korean, who believed herself to be North Korean, but the whole time she was searching for her identity. Now, if this sounds like a Netflix drama, it's not. It's 100% real. This took place from 1979 to 1994.
Wow.
I've recently been speaking to this woman, Monica Macias. She's also the daughter of an African president.
What?
She's written a book. She's a wonderful lady. And so we're going to talk about what it must be like for a North Korean to grow up in Pyongyang.
Well, what on earth happened
You've
here?
Not heard of this before, have
not
you?
Not at all.
And let me just tell you that when I told some Korean people I was reading this book and I was doing some research on an African woman that grew up in Pyongyang, they looked at me as if to say, nah, that's not right.
Yeah.
Like, go and check your facts, David. Uh-huh. And then I would show them photos. And I'm sorry we're not live here to show you the photos. I would show them photos. They would fall off their chair.
Yeah.
They would say, no, that's not right.
And how could that be?
Absolutely true.
I'm so curious of how this got started. So you're saying her father was president.
Yeah.
She grew up under the guidance of the supreme leader of North Korea.
Yeah.
Speaking only Korean, as in being raised there, not as a foreigner in North Korea, you know, going to foreign school or anything like that, if that even exists, but no, like being raised as a Korean almost.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming to terms. So I'll go into the father, but there's this, let me start with this one part of the book. Imagine this scene. It's a university classroom. It's in North Korea, Pyongyang. It's in philosophy class.
Mm-hmm.
Young woman raises her hand and says to the philosophy teacher in North Korea, sir, are the principles of the public distribution system really ideal? And if our society pursues much more collective well-being compared to a capitalist society, then why does the level of happiness or wealth vary so much from person to person?
Wow.
She raises her hand and questions socialism in North Korea.
Was that okay?
in the public imagination, she would be goose-stepped out and put to an into an education prison,
yes,
or fed to dogs or something.
You would think so.
You would think so.
Uh-huh.
But that's not what happened. People spoke back to her and said, well, do you think this system is better? And this is how this young lady grew up. And in her book, she doesn't go to town on North Korean human rights. It was part of her upbringing. It's who she is today.
She doesn't live there anymore.
She now lives in the United Kingdom. She's also lived in South Korea, in Spain. She's just finished a master's degree. She's very interested in philosophy, thoughts, post-colonialism.
Uh-huh.
But imagine growing up and that being your experience. But the point is, just to reaffirm, it's real.
Wow. And she's recently published this book that anyone can get their hands
on. You can go, the Korean one, because she's Korean is her first language, uh-huh, because she grew up in North Korea.
Sure.
The Korean one was published in 2013. The recent one, Black Girl from Pyongyang, was published, I believe, this year. It's just come out. Wow. Fabulous pictures in it.
I'm really interested as well. Like, that is such a kind of evocative opening scene there.
Yeah.
Is her, or the reaction to her, because she was a black woman in Pyongyang, which I'm assuming is not very common, or is that the reaction to any university student who is curious, you know, and asks that question?
That's a good thing, because we have this as a reality.
Mm.
We don't know the lives, but I think the point was that she was willing to speak up.
Mm.
Whereas many, there was a sea of silence. There were people holding their tongues. And that's not to say that's good or bad. That's just a different culture sometimes.
So Monica Macias.
Yep. Shall we get to who she is and why she was there?
Yeah.
So her father was the president of Equatorial Guinea.
Okay.
His name was Francisco Macias Nguema. And he was friends of Kim Il-sung.
Uh-huh.
North Korea had many countries in Africa that they were friendly with.
Sure.
They were part of the non-aligned movement in the Cold War. And so Monica had been there when she was five, and she was introduced to Gimti and Pajon. And then at the age of seven, her father sent her, her sister and her brother to North Korea to study.
Wow.
Because the education in North Korea was good. In the 70s and 80s, North Korea was pretty rich. It was mm-hmm. doing okay then. And while she was there, her father was ousted in a coup d'etat.
Oh, no.
By her uncle.
Oh,
and this is why she was never able to read the book Hamlet, because it always felt too close to home.
Wow.
The Lion King. This is what happened to her father.
Uh-huh.
And so her family was killed.
Oh, dear.
Her father was killed. And
she was in North Korea at this time?
She was in North Korea.
Just temporarily studying.
And Kim Il-sung, the leader of North Korea at the time, said, I'm going to honor your father's wishes and take care of you and your family while you're here.
Wow.
She stayed there for another 15 years.
50. So that wasn't the plan initially. She was just going to study there for X amount of time and maybe go back to her family.
Because the education there is perhaps better than Equatorial Guinea at the time, the idea was that she would go there, learn some skills, be educated, and bring them back to Guinea, Equatorial Guinea, where she could use them. But that all changed. She feared for her life to go back because her father has just been murdered.
Yes, of course.
By a family member.
And this is in the 80s, late 70s?
Early 80s that took place.
Wow. And so she stayed there for 15 years and then left.
And she was there from the age of around 6 or 7.
Uh-huh.
So she first went there at 5, so she went there at 7. And you know, at that stage, memories are a bit of a blur.
Sure.
You're sort of coming into consciousness. You're alive, you're thinking, you're feeling and experiencing. But when you cast your mind back, you get some scattered memories of 3 or 4, perhaps mm-hmm. that age. But you really sort of come into being of who you are around that time. And when she came around that time, she was in North Korea.
Goodness. With siblings as well.
So. With a brother called Fran and a sister. I want to say her sister's name was Maribel. So she was there with a brother and a sister.
Welcome to Arirang Radio.
If you are in Jeju,
88.7 in Jeju City.
88.1 in Seogwipo City.
101.9 in the Daejeon area.
Arirang Radio.
We're back for part two, Now and Then with David, talking about the story of Monica Macias, the black girl growing up in Pyongyang now. Her father, her family had been killed in Equatorial Guinea. And Kim Il-sung has said, you're going to stay here. We're going to educate you.
Yeah, so the people in charge of Equatorial Guinea, the family members, they'd executed her father by firing squad. Her mother was still alive. Her mother came to visit. Uh-huh. I'll come to this, but her mother didn't speak Korean, and Monica at the time didn't speak Spanish.
Goodness.
And so she was estranged from her mother in that way, and that must make the thing even more difficult for her. But Kim Il-sung, he said that he would look after her. He didn't send them back. He could have done.
Yeah,
but he offered them home and board and education. He regularly checked up on them and gave advice. I'll come to that. But let me start the second part with this question. Do Eskimos dream of sandy beaches?
Well, yeah, you would assume not if they don't know they exist, right?
Yeah.
And that's maybe the key here. She... coming at that young age, this was all she was knowing, I suppose, Pyongyang, and growing up here. And it seems like, I don't know, they weren't like put in a hut or anything like that. They were given a decent living here and educated.
And that's one of the big things. I'll come to it later. But just to go back to that, do Eskimos dream of sandy beaches? No, they don't, because they don't have the image. They don't have the conception. They've not seen that things before. And so the idea here is wherever we are in the world, we are all victims of culture.
Mm.
We're all... trapped by the mental images that we have, this hegemony. And this was what Monica was experiencing, that this is where she was growing up. And throughout her book, I called her a philosopher because a couple of times we've focused on the color of her skin, which is very important to her and is part of the story, which makes it interesting. But she's also a thinker. She's also a philosopher at heart. She's interested in the idea of truth. Is there a truth? Do the people in North Korea know truth? And you said about her safety. When she eventually leaves North Korea, she feels like, oh, I'm around places where people can now criticize me, can attack me. There are prostitutes. There's a whole different capitalist world going on that she had no idea or imagined.
Wow.
But yeah, she eventually did get out of it. But before there, she went to a boarding school.
Okay.
Now, so they sent her to the Mangyongdae Revolutionary School. And... they didn't have any they didn't have any girls in that school at the time.
Uh-huh.
In this boarding school. It was all boys.
Wow.
And so what they did, what the North Koreans did, is they got other North Korean girls who had also lost their father and made a class for her.
Oh, just for her?
Well, because they needed to start a class there. I think that girls' class now still exists in North Korea.
Amazing.
But what they also had to do was this. They had to get girls that were roughly 2 years older than her.
Why is that?
Have a think.
Girls 2 years older than her to kind of teach her, be her like mentor?
Because she was so much taller than the average North Korean. She's a big lady. I mean, she's a big woman. And so they couldn't put her with people of her own age because she would tower above them. And so the girls that she was with, they were all her on knees.
Uh-huh.
And that's a complete thing in Korean culture, isn't it? If you know your soyeol. And so she was there. And that's in the sort of late 1980s. And she was at this very important revolutionary school. So 10 additional girls were brought in. The same number for her sister was there. And they started bringing them together in this school with other North Korean students.
What a unique upbringing. Not just the fact this is in North Korea, but special, you know, dispensations for her sister as well. So she had a smooth time? She liked school? She was good?
Well, I wouldn't say it was smooth. She suffered a lot. In her book, she talks about it. She spent a lot of time alone. She spent a lot of time at nighttime with this existential, who am I? Where? Imagine being away from your mother and in a foreign country. Also, the idea that she was never accepted. She tried very hard to straighten her hair, to try to be Korean. She wanted to fit in. But ultimately... she doesn't tell horror stories about her time at school.
Okay.
She speaks of it quite warmly. She talks about the friends that she made. And
nice.
You don't come away from it thinking that was a terrible experience. She doesn't suffer physical bullying. She doesn't suffer psychological torment from other people.
That's good.
The only suffering she has is in her own mind, where she's trying to come to terms with who I am.
Mm.
But the people around her are not sort of victimizing her.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how much or in how much depth we've talked about it. We've definitely brushed up on the subject of, you know, racism here in South Korea in the 70s and 80s. You know, I don't know how much it still happens today against the other, you know, and against people who were black in particular. You know, there were some awful names being bandied about in the 80s, 90s, even the 2000s. You rarely hear some of those names being said nowadays. But in North Korea, maybe because she was special, I don't. I guess we don't have a sample group here, but it doesn't seem like she was victim to those kind of, I guess, discrimination.
I would suggest that there is less school bullying in North Korea than in South Korea. I would suggest there's also less freedom of speech and free ideas, and but there's probably also less suicide. This is all like that. But you're right, Pete, that while South Korea was also experiencing questions of multiculturalism and what it means to have people around us that we view as the other when really they're also us at the same time, North Korea was going through that at the same time. And this should be breaking our mental images of what that country is and was, because it also had similarities. Now, Monica, she really wanted to play the piano.
That was her passion.
That was her passion. That's what she wanted to do. Kim Il-sung phoned her and said, what do you want to do? What's your goal? And she was like, I want to play piano.
Yeah.
Kim Il-sung, and through his aides as well, apparently said, listen, there have been people in North Korea that have been learning piano for a lot longer than you. They've been doing it since the age of two or three.
Okay.
You're never going to get ahead of them. Also, I promised your father you would go back to Equatorial Guinea with skills that are transferable to transform your country and develop it.
Okay.
Now, let's just consider North Korea. They did transform their country. They got rockets and satellites and things. They did it.
Yeah.
And so Kim Il-sung wanted her to be able to have that. And so he told her to study textiles instead. And that's what she did.
Something more practical then.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So studying textiles. When we opened this scene, she was like in a philosophy class, right? So she didn't completely get lost in that subject of just studying textiles.
I think even when you're at university and college, you have to take various classes, and there's probably classes teaching them the importance of North Korean thought and ideological purity in the systems and things like that. So she always had them. But while she was there, she also said she read the Korean translations of Jane Austen and Shakespeare and things like this.
Wow.
So we also get this idea that North Koreans are completely closed off from the rest of the world. They have no idea. But Monica is saying that when she lived there, she read the Korean translations of these classic bits of literature.
Wow.
And as I said, she could never quite read Hamlet because the parallels were just too disturbing.
Does she get to leave North Korea like freely if she wants to visit family, if that remains, or travel the world if she wants?
Really good question. So she does do a couple of, she does run away a couple of times. I don't mean she leaves North Korea, but she wants to go and see her brother and sister in a different school.
Okay.
And so she does these things just like any teenager,
you
know, sort of coming to terms with it. She is allowed to go. She does go to Beijing. And so with other foreign students, this is when she first leaves Pyongyang. She goes to visit a cousin in Beijing. And this is when she talks about exiting the cave. Do you know the Plato? Do you know Plato's allegory of the cave?
I don't think so.
Have you seen The Matrix?
Yes.
Okay. So the world around us is not the real world. There's a whole other world out there.
Okay.
Plato, the Greek philosopher, told this as the allegory of the cave, that everything we see here are just shadows. And you need to leave this world and find the truth. Now, when Monica goes to Beijing, she comes across an American and she kind of reels in horror because she's been taught certain things about the Americans. But the American doesn't have horns.
Yeah.
He's relatively kind. And then she meets some South Koreans and they go to karaoke and they start engaging with each other.
Wow. This is on like a permitted trip to Beijing.
A permitted trip to Beijing, yeah. And so you must understand that while she's there, there are other foreign international students. It's not just her by herself. There's students from Syria. There's students from other parts of the world that are there.
Wow.
No British people or American people at the time, but she's there with an international community. They go to Beijing, and it's while she's out there that she realizes that the world is a little bit different from Pyongyang. And that's the important thing. She realizes it's different.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't come back going, oh my God, this world is completely terrible.
Yeah.
That's never the conclusion she makes. But she comes back saying, there's a bigger world out there.
And she's interested. I'm guessing this is stimulating her thought processes. Wow.
It's challenging everything that she previously knew. And by the way, that's what this book did to me when I was reading it. Because I thought I knew some bits about North Korea, but gives you new perspectives.
Interesting.
Music that you want to dance to. Arirang Radio.
We're back for part three, talking about this amazing story of Monica Macias growing up in Pyongyang, now having visited Beijing and having her eyes open to the wider world. And so she goes back to Pyongyang.
She does, and she realizes, she talks about this Pyongyang mindset. Uh-huh. And this is where people sort of say to her, that's because you grew up in Pyongyang. That's why you think like that. Okay. And that's where I came to this part that we started with. We're all victims of culture. Mm. We're all Eskimos in some way. I'm very happy that I've got to live in different parts of the world because it's changed the way I see things.
Yes.
And it's really broadened my worldview. I think travel does enlighten people. Mm. It doesn't always make you better, but it makes you different.
Yeah.
And it gives you different perspectives. The way that Monica comes to terms with the fact that she's not Korean, the fact that she's, you know, she's in North Korea and she's done her very best to try to become part of it.
Mm.
The way that she sort of comes to terms with her own identity is so beautifully ironic. She does it through a Korean folktale.
Oh.
That's the Korean folktale of the woodcutter and the fairy.
Okay.
This has become, it was quite a problematic folktale for some people recently, but the basic idea, and this is well known for many, many decades, this story, is that there is a woodcutter who wants a wife.
Mm.
And so these fairies would come down and swim in a pool.
Yeah.
And he's told that if you take one of the fairies' wings or dresses, they won't be able to fly back up to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can marry her. And if you have three children, the fairy will stay here forever. Mm-hmm. He does that. He takes the fairy stuff. She can't go up to heaven. He marries her. They have two children. And then he feels bad.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, let's go back up to heaven together. He tells the fairy what's going on. Right?
Yeah.
And so they try to go up, but he can't go up to her. He falls down because he's of the earth.
Yeah.
And the fairy, she's of the fairy place, the heaven.
Ah.
And so she realizes that there's a place where we're meant to be. And sometimes you try to put yourself into another realm, but it doesn't quite work.
Ah.
And she, knowing that story, uses it to tell herself, maybe I'm a fairy in the world here. Maybe this is not my real home. Maybe I've got to reach out and find somewhere. And isn't it beautiful that she came to that realization using a traditional Korean folktale that's also still known in South Korea?
Absolutely. That is still very famous. I don't think there are too many kids' books about the exact same details now, but definitely my mum would tell me that story, you know, growing up.
They took it out because it was a bit problematic with gender, but it was a traditional folktale here for a time. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So she realizes this perhaps isn't where I belong, as in to stay forever. I need to spread my wings, perhaps.
Yep, and that's what she did. And she asks, I believe it's around 1994, that, you know, I need to go out, I need to see the world, and I need to do different things. And she's allowed to do that. Now, just before she leaves Pyongyang, she talks about a meeting with her friend Yunmi. And she doesn't always use their real names because of safety. And she goes back to Pyongyang maybe in 2010 after leaving it 16 years later. And she's always curious, like, can she go and meet her friends? Are they allowed to come back together? That's one of the things that's not always easy in a society
that.
It's very rigid. But before she leaves, Yunmi, her friend, North Korean friend, Yunmi was raised outside of North Korea because she was the daughter of a diplomat.
So
she knew what the outside world was like. Yunmi said to Monica at this time, wherever you go, the people of that country have their own fences constructed of self-made prejudices and stereotypes. If we're trapped, those people are trapped too. The only difference is that they have a few more things they can enjoy.
That perspective, it's hard to argue with that, right? And wow, she's written this all in this book, Monica, these musings.
All of it. And the interactions with people and what she feels about certain things. She, you know, she's very happy to be living in a free, open world now. Mm. And she did her master's in the United Kingdom.
Uh-huh.
She loves exploring thought. But she did say that as an adult, this kind of structure and her daily habits and tasks and goals, being productive, managing stress, her upbringing has allowed her to be where she is today. She's not sort of, I don't know how to say this, but like battling depression at the bottom of a bottle.
Okay.
No, she's writing books and she's doing master's degrees and she's succeeding in life. And she says the way she was raised in terms of productivity and efficiency and balance is, that's who she is today. You can't hide your past.
Yeah, I mean, she maybe feels, it seems, that she's got things to thank for her upbringing in Pyongyang. And of course, maybe going back to Equatorial Guinea at that time would have been awful for her outcomes, right?
And so she didn't go back to Equatorial Guinea straight away. When she left, she went to Spain. She then worked as a hotel attendant in London. She worked as a jewelry designer in New York.
Wow.
A fashion designer. She lived in Gangnam for a while here in Seoul.
I wonder if that was problematic in any way or some interesting conversations she might have had while here.
Absolutely. And what she said is that sometimes people would try to use her for their own political means. Mm. Because if some people, they have a very negative view of North Korea, they would like to speak to her to try to get her to boost their own platform. Other people were very interested in her story. Other people didn't believe it. But wherever she's gone, she's always had this kind of people being fascinated. Monica says she didn't find any meaningful cultural differences between the two Koreas.
Wow.
Actually, she said the only reason is because they don't really understand each other too much. But in terms of culture, in terms of the way things, this is her experience.
Yeah, sure.
And she's lived in both.
Mm-hmm.
She said that, you know, there's not any real big meaningful differences, but the emotional distance grows wider with every passing year.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about us being separated longer and longer. I mean, I spoke to a couple of foreigners here who are broadcasters, and they got a chance through a TV show, I believe, or it was through some diplomatic thing that came off the back of a TV show, to visit Pyongyang for a good few days. And they were recollecting their tales a couple of weeks back over a beer, and they were really... It blew my mind. They said they were much freer than you can imagine while they were there. You know, they thought they'd be minded 24/7. Their phones would be checked all the time, but it was nothing like that. They were free to go out for jogs and walks around Pyongyang. And
they weren't there recently, I just checked. It's been shut down for about 3 years.
Yeah, no, it was pre-COVID they went. They were just talking about it more recently. And I was like, this is unbelievable. And they're actually quite complimentary about it. But I don't know, maybe the flip side is, you know, Pyongyang, number one, I guess, is the most affluent place in North Korea. And then I'm guessing Monica, you know, being handpicked out by Kim Il-sung, the leader, to be taken care of, means that she was having a better than average experience, you know. So, again, I'm really curious. And it's really sad that it's so closed off that we don't know. Like, what does the average worker feel like when they're growing up? What is it like at an average school? How would someone get in trouble or not get in trouble by saying the same things if they were in just a local school and things like this? It's really interesting. I just want to know, right? And if it was open, you'd be much, much more privy to all these things, I suppose.
But if it was open, it wouldn't be North Korea.
It wouldn't be,
Do you see what I mean by that? Yeah. The very act of observing something fundamentally changes it. Yeah. It's good to see that philosopher thinker inside you coming out, that you want to know these things. And just to draw a similar comparison, I'm pretty sure that I, as a white English male with a PhD, probably receive a rather fortunate experience here in Seoul, South Korea, that might be different from Korean women.
Yes.
Just like Monica. And so if I speak fondly of my life here, that's not always representative of everyone. This is what Monica is doing in this book, by the way. She asks multiple times, what is the truth? Is there a truth? Is there a single narrative? Because she's coming to terms with, what's the truth about North Korea? What's the truth about her father, who was ousted in the coup d'etat and executed? Was he a good guy or a bad guy?
Oh, wow.
Who has the answers? What's going on? And she's doing all this. And throughout it, she's thinking, she's studying, she's telling her story. And I encourage anyone to go out and read about it. Go and look at the photos and go and better familiarize yourself with the work of Monica Macias, the black girl from Pyongyang.
Wow, she sounds like an inquisitive soul indeed. David, as ever, thank you. What a topic today. We will see you again next Monday.
See you next week. Thank you very much.
You can listen to Monday's segment Now and Then with David Tizard every Monday from 10 a.m. KST on hashtag Daily K.